You never know you're in zombie takeout, would you? Well, it'd be like you're asleep in a zombie takeout. Not that I'd like to sleep in a zombie takeout, mind you. Not without any air. You'd wake up for a start, and where would you be? In a zombie takeout.
Welcome to episode 160 of Zombie Takeout,
Zombie Takeout.
the B movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And yes, this is episode 160. I kind of misspoke at the beginning of last week's episode. I think I was looking at the listener submitted and I said 158.
Oh, yeah, I completely didn't catch that.
I didn't catch it until I was giving it a final listen before uploading it. Anyway,
Ah.
before we get to this week's movie, over the weekend you had a chance to see a movie that we're going to be reviewing soon.
I know this is kind of weird. We're teasing a movie that we're going to be reviewing somewhere down the road because it's not in wide release yet, right?
We have a trilogy coming up next. I'm thinking right after that.
Yeah,
But we'll
after
get to that.
this.
We'll discuss that later. Anyway.
But the movie itself isn't actually out yet. It's only out in select cities, and thank God I live in one of those select cities. And that is, of course, Upstream Color. I posted some pictures from the Music Box Theater here in Chicago of Mr. Carruth giving us a talking to after the movie, and really, it's the only way to see a Shane Carruth movie is to have him get up and explain stuff to you after seeing it. It helps a lot. You're kind of like, oh, he did. He opened up my eyes a lot to stuff with Primer as well, too.
Oh, good.
So,
Incidentally, I
yeah.
watched that last Sunday again. I finally saw The Hacksaw. Hilarious.
Yes, it is.
And I connected a few things that I hadn't before, and I'm doubting my analysis of a few other things, so.
Well, I posted stuff on our Facebook page way back for the original, thread for that. I don't know if we should updated or something, or posted in a new place.
It's still there. If people want to see it, they can go back. I'll take a
Yeah.
look at it myself because I haven't seen it.
Well, I mean, the one thing I said was that I forgot what I said now. I thought that was a long time ago. That you were wrong about the cell phone theory.
Oh, okay.
There's, I mean, because things get weird before the cell phone. It's
Yeah.
just that they're subtle and you don't know they're weird until after you've seen it a couple times. Like, there's another Aaron in the attic. Well, Aaron is in the attic
For most
way
of the
before
movie,
the
yeah.
cell phone. Yeah.
That's true.
And, however, you were spot on about the gunman at the party
Ah.
and how it was important for him. In fact, now that I've seen it a third time, and what Shane Carruth said, the movie, actually, Shane Carruth boiled down the movie to being about trust and what happens when trust, goes sour. That's pretty much it.
Interesting.
Because the thing is, they're going back and they're fucking with themselves and each other, their timeline. So it looks like the gunman, he's trying to steal Abe's girl, which, I mean, sounds crazy. Sounds like, where do you get this from? But that's the second Aaron. That's not the first Aaron. The second Aaron doesn't want to be married in that relationship. He wants Abe's girl. And really, I think he may have even constructed the entire gunman thing to begin with himself.
Possible.
Like, set the like it may have not even happened at all in the original timeline.
What didn't happen in the original timeline because, and this is what I noticed this time, the garage scene, and I mentioned this when we reviewed it.
Yeah.
I said there's a moment there where you can see the timeline changing. It's that
Yeah.
moment when Babe turns around very slowly and the camera kind of pans around him. And he says to Robert, I think it is, what did you just call him when you walked in?
Well, yeah, that was the other thing too. That's when Abe figured out that Aaron was traveling back in time without him.
Yeah, because Robert didn't call him anything when they walked in.
Yes, he did. He called him a hero.
Not at that beginning of the scene.
Yeah.
I didn't catch it. Okay.
I caught it for the first time seeing it. You can't hear it because there's like a bunch of stuff going on. He's kind of walking in, and he just kind of calls him like, I can't even catch exactly what it was, but it was
All
something
right.
along the lines of Mr. Hero. And
Okay.
he's like, "What did you call him? Oh, didn't he tell you? He went and,
Yeah,
stopped."
right.
And it's like, "Wait a minute. How could you have been at that party if we were together doing this other stuff?"
Right.
And of course, the other thing is the Mr. Oh, what was his name?
Granger?
The Granger, and the whole like collapsing, something was done to him.
Oh.
Because think about it, there is no case of any laws of physics be of multiple people existing in the same timeline doing anything else,
Right.
But Aaron catches up to him, knocks him out. Oh, I don't know what happened to him. Yeah, because the thing is, they're fucking with their machines also, which is why like one collapsed, one's ears bleeding.
Well, I think I figured out the writing thing.
Oh
'Cause
yeah, that.
that I think I figured out this time. Writing is muscle memory.
Yeah.
And it's fine muscle control. And they said writing with their dominant hand is like writing with their non-dominant hand. Changing their
Right.
timeline is actually undoing that learning.
That could very well be it too. Yeah.
But back to Upstream. From what I understand, it's not the Baroque puzzle that Primer is. It's more impressionistic.
Yes.
It's not the story that's interesting per se. I mean, I'm sure it's interesting, but
Oh yeah.
it's how it's told.
Yeah,
That's
but I
the
mean both.
particularly interesting part.
The beginning is kind of uncomfortable to watch. It's kind of, yeah.
How, and this is a slight spoiler for those who know nothing about the movie, how creepy is the bug?
The bucket's it's what it kind of when it grows up.
Oh, you see it later in the movie. Okay.
I'll just say that it's when it grows up.
That's when it gets bad. Okay.
Yeah. But if that part's done well, it's just like seeing what this person goes through in the first like 20 minutes or so, I think it was. It's just, yeah, it's rough.
And the end interests me. The last third is completely free of dialogue.
The end is insane, yeah. The end is just kind of what? But like the last, I don't know, the last 20 minutes, like the last act of it. You're just kind of like, huh? Yeah, can't wait for us to discuss it in more detail. I can talk about a little bit more about the exchange. It'll make more
And
sense.
I'll have no we'll got more because I have only a basic idea of the story now.
Yeah.
All right, so on to some news. Now, this first story, I think we predicted some time ago. I think everybody saw it coming, but now it's been confirmed. These are both from CinemaBlend, by the way. Star Wars movies to be released every summer starting in 2015.
Yeah.
This morning, the Walt Disney Company held their CinemaCon 2013 presentation, and while outlining the studio's slate over the next few years, studio chairman Alan Horn confirmed that they are still planning on having Star Wars Episode 7 in theaters during the summer of 2015, and are planning to produce sequels to follow every other year, with spin-off movies set in the Star Wars universe coming out in the years in between. We saw this coming as soon as we
Right.
found out about the spin-offs. It's going to be 7, probably Han Solo, 8, then probably Boba, then 9.
It's just oversaturation. By what year are people going to be bored with Star Wars movies?
Yeah, the thing is, releasing them every 3 years kept us hungry, even with
Good
the
God.
prequels.
Oh, well, yeah.
Doing it every year is going to get a little tiring. And the thrill will be gone, to paraphrase B.B. King.
Yeah. it's gonna be, you know, yeah, to pick your whatever franchise. It's like, oh, another one of those. Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right, next story. Weird Science is getting a remake. Deadline says Michael Bacall, who penned the script for the 21 Jump Street feature film and the planned sequel, has been tapped to write the screenplay for Universal Pictures' Weird Science remake. Bacall also wrote the script for Project X, which is about a high school party that gets out of control.
Yeah.
So I think he's a good fit for it, but I don't know if Weird Science would play these days.
I don't know either. I mean, isn't that what kind of the Big Bang Theory is in a way?
Yeah, yeah. True. I think that's probably why they're going for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if those kinds of... I mean, you have Project X, and you've got... You have... Oh, there was another big party movie with a number, or kind of, not party, but it was kind of, you know, offensive humor kind of thing, with a number that I'm blanking on right now.
Oh, yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. The one where they said they actors were coerced into doing it.
Yeah, yeah. So I think they're probably going to go that direction with the humor. They have to, with something like Weird Science. But it's so quintessentially 80s in a lot of ways.
I guess if they kept the 80s thing going. You know,
and they are kind of coming back.
If they gave it an 80s flavor, it yeah. might work. Kind of a Wedding Singer type thing.
Mm. But, I mean, Jump Street worked because it was a parody of the series. Weird Science was a comedy to begin with.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see if they try to make it more scientifically founded, because I've recently heard that they're working on technology to basically print organs.
Wow.
And they could, you know, advance technology a little bit from where we are now and do that with the whole person.
Don't you think Kelly LeBrock's a bit too old for this, though?
Yes, as okay. is Vanessa Angel, who played her in the series, which I've seen quite a bit of, I'll admit.
I forgot there was a series. You know what they should be remaking?
Mm-hmm.
Misfits of Science.
Oh, my. I vaguely remember that show. We've talked about that before. I have a feeling it's probably going to be Olivia Wilde playing, I can't remember the character's name, but in the movie. Weird Science. Oh,
yeah, who knows. But yeah, not a bad choice. Not
yeah.
a bad choice.
She kind of takes those roles, her or Olivia Munn.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to this week's movie, which is from 1990. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Oh, you spoiled it.
Hmm? Oh, the ending. Gotcha.
Wow.
It's been a long day.
You're telling me.
And that, of course, brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by coins. When you want to test out the laws of probability, try a coin. They're not just for spending anymore.
And also brought to you by the rape of the Sabine women. Yeah, it has to be that way. Well, so we have these two men who are... the only thing they can recall is being woken up that morning and told that they need to come and see the king at the court. So they're riding through the woods, and one of them flips a coin, and something odd happens. He notices that every time he flips the coin, because for some reason he flipped it more than once, it kept coming out heads. Mm-hmm. Over and over and over again. And so something is wrong with the world that we're told immediately here. And they make it to this court where, well, they have to figure out what's going on with the prince. Should I just pretend that we all know what Hamlet's about?
Yeah, might as well. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are minor characters in Hamlet.
Okay, so yes. There
that
is...
might need to be set up, but I think we can assume that everyone knows what Hamlet is.
Right, yeah, if you know what Hamlet is, well, I can sum it up this way. Remember Back to the Future 2?
Okay.
Where Marty is kind of in the background of Back to the Future 1, just kind
oh,
of in
yes.
odd parts and even scenes and whatnot mm-hmm. that weren't in the first time. Combine that with Hamlet from the point of view of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, who really are interchangeable, so much so that throughout the movie, everybody mistakes which one is which, including Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yeah, at first they don't even know who's who.
All right, so really, the plot here is they, assuming that if you're not familiar with Hamlet, I will go ahead here. They arrive at the court. The prince is depressed. They, for some reason, cannot figure out why he's depressed, nor can anyone. And so they have to delve. The parents, well, the stepfather and his mom put him up to delve why he's so depressed. And they get the matters of the story was that he, of course, is old enough to be king. His father has died under mysterious circumstances, and then marries his uncle.
His mother marries his father's brother.
Yes, his mother marries his father's uncle, and as they say there, and you're feeling depressed. Well, I don't know. Why would he? So, all this espionage and intrigue going on around our heroes, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and they're just trying to figure out what the fuck is all this about? When, of course, well, I'll just spoil it here. Everybody dies. And hilarity ensues.
Well, Hamlet is a tragedy.
Yeah. Hamlet's, one of his highest body counts. Well,
Well, Titus is the highest, but Hamlet's
Titus
up there, yeah.
Andronicus is the highest, but Hamlet is pretty damn high.
Now, the movie is based on the original Broadway production of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead by Tom Stoppard, which opened on October 9th, 1967. I had no idea it was that old.
I had no idea this movie was so recent. I had assumed this movie was at least a 1980s thing, or
I wasn't sure. I knew it was at least late 80s, if not early 90s, because I'd seen it in the early 90s.
But yeah, when I saw it was 1990, I was like, wow. And seeing Gary Oldman young is just
That was
amazing.
weird. And he's not that old.
No, he's not. He's like 32 in this, back in 90.
Yeah. But it wasn't that long ago, but he looks much younger than he does now. Maybe he's been playing older lately. Tinker Tailor, he played a little older than he was. Than he
I
is.
think he's been playing older after this ever since, because, I mean, this is 4 years before Bram Stoker's Dracula, which, of course, he played ancient in that for the most part. I mean, he was kind of, even when he was young, quote unquote young, he was under makeup in that movie. But yeah, then when he was the vampire, he was ancient. And Fifth Element was kind of an older role if you think about it.
Or at least a lot of the makeup,
Yeah.
prosthetics, what have you. This was actually the first thing I saw him and Tim Roth in,
Huh.
because it predates The Professional, Leon as it's known in other countries, which is the first
Yeah.
thing I saw, or that I first time I really became aware of Gary Oldman.
I have to watch it's been so long since I've seen The Professional. I have to rewatch that.
And before Reservoir Dogs, which was really the first time I was kind of aware of Tim Roth. But I'd seen this before. I kind of, and to me, they were just, the guys from Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead.
I, you know what? I probably, this is probably the first time I've seen them together for me at least. I mean, Tim Roth. I think I'd seen Pulp Fiction first.
Well, no, Pulp Fiction was at 94.
Yeah.
Pulp
Yeah,
Fiction
but
and Reservoir Dogs were after this.
I don't think I'd seen this movie until more mid-90s.
Oh, okay, you saw it some years later.
Yeah, maybe a year or two later, not much.
I was, as we've talked about, I'm a huge Shakespeare geek, have been since high school, actually. So I saw this as soon as possible.
I didn't know this existed until like later on. I mean, I've loved Stopper and anything I've seen him do. But yeah.
Incidentally, this is the only movie he's directed. So
Okay.
this was his first movie as a director, and he hasn't done one since.
Yeah. One director. His writing credits for movies is kind of weird and surprising. Like Billy Bathgate and the Russia House.
Interesting.
He did the screenplay for Brazil, of course. Yeah, just he wrote an episode of. Oh, wait, it not that Full House.
Wow.
Apparently, there was a TV series in '73 called Full
Oh, okay.
House. Wouldn't that have been funny?
Oh, yeah.
Uncle Jesse.
Somebody needed a paycheck.
But of course, Shakespeare in Love is probably his biggest movie.
And I think this is a movie that's really only known by theater geeks and or Shakespeare geeks.
Was this only a TV movie, though?
No, this was, I'm pretty sure, theatrical. I saw it on TV the first time, probably on Bravo, because that was the artsy channel at the time.
The production credits actually have WNET, like, New York PBS.
Well, they may have helped him out, though. He'd have maybe funded it or produced it in some way. Now, the very beginning of the movie, it kind of lets you know what you're in for. Because the opening theme, even though it's, two Shakespearean characters and it's completely period, is blues.
Yeah, well, it's not even just blues either. It's Pink Floyd.
Oh, that's right. I have that in my trivia. I forgot about that. It
And
is Seamus from Metal.
for metal, yeah. I was trying to see, I was trying to figure out if that was the only time that they'd been used willingly in a soundtrack, but then I forgot Life on Mars had, and I see their IMDb, they've been in like 86
Okay.
films, so.
Wow. There's also a bit of echoes. When the theater company performs the pseudo Hamlet, you can hear the
That
rapier so
ding or
sword.
whatever.
It, that's from Echoes.
Yes. The first time I'd ever picked up on that. I don't think I'd caught that the first few times I'd seen it.
But yeah, so there's Pink Floyd in this Shakespearean thing.
Tom Stoppard, by the way, is a Pink Floyd nut.
Oh, okay.
I would seriously suspect one of the last plays that he's written, I had to check if he was still alive, actually, but he is. There was a play he did a couple years ago called Rock and Roll, and I suspect that'll be turned into a movie about these rock fans from Czechoslovakia and going through the Velvet Revolution and all that.
Oh.
And also, it's tracing the history of Pink Floyd. Like, the play literally begins with the Piper Before Dawn,
Wow.
and the girl believes she's had an encounter with Syd Barrett. So yeah, he's a
Interesting.
nut.
But you have this music that doesn't quite fit what you think the movie's going to be about, if you have a clue of what the movie's going to be about.
Well, the title is two Shakespeare characters, and he begins it with Seamus.
Well, I'm saying if you know the names of the characters, if you know it's based on Shakespeare.
Right.
And then they get to the coin toss, which kind of lets you know that the rules don't apply. Normal probability and just logic don't work here. And then I loved that the fact that as they were getting closer to their entrance into the play, they were remembering more.
Yeah.
Because the first thing, and you left this out of the summary, but on their way there, they meet the players.
I did leave the players out of the summary. They are a pretty crucial role too, yeah.
Yeah. Richard Dreyfuss as the Player King. In some of his best work, I think.
Probably, yeah.
But they meet the players, and they start to kind of sort of remember things. And then just before they transition into the castle, they remember their names, or they get their names straight.
Well, they practice.
And I love the transition into the castle. The players are performing for them, and they end up with this curtain over their heads, and when it's taken off, they're in Elsinore Castle.
And by the way, the whole thing that the players, when they're advertising their repertoire, they use gory romances pirated from the Italians, which of course is a majority of Shakespeare's works. And then he lists, of course, every historical tragedy and the version of Three's Company, that farce that Shakespeare would write to also.
Shakespeare, for as beautiful as his language is, in terms of stories, he was kind of a hack. If you look at the stories, first of all, he lifted 99% of it.
Yeah.
But also, they're very soap opera.
Oh, definitely.
But he just has this beautiful language that has lasted, centuries.
That is what his strength was. It was as a poet. I mean, wow. I mean, the way he could phrase something.
And when they first show the actual play, the original Hamlet.
Yeah.
Took me a minute to kind of adjust to the Shakespearean.
Well, yeah, that's the other weird thing, too, of course, when they're with us and it's just, you know, an extra scene, they're behind the scenes, they talk in pretty much modern, you know,
more or less.
English,
it's a little heightened, English. But it's not by any means Shakespearean.
Right. And then, of course, when the play comes roaring in, because it's kind of this, you know, tsunami just overrunning everything, the play itself, they change to Shakespearean and they're, you know, reciting his lines verbatim.
And it was a little adjustment. And I generally don't have a problem understanding Shakespeare. I love Shakespeare. But normally when I watch Shakespeare, I'm ready for it. You know, I'm paying attention to every word and honestly fighting to keep up a little bit at times.
Yeah.
So when you have more or less contemporary dialogue and then you get Shakespeare thrown at you, it takes a second to figure out what they're talking about.
But I felt, though, that with Stoppard's direction, you get so much more out of Shakespeare's language. He just knows how to articulate it.
Yeah.
You know, you understand it a whole lot more than if you were just to watch it on its own.
Although I will say the actor who played Hamlet, kind of a little over the top.
It's Hamlet.
Well, but even for Hamlet, he was a little over the top.
Really?
I mean, okay, granted, he has to play insanely depressed, and
right.
Hamlet is a bit over the top by nature. He went a little too far. I also kind of felt like he didn't know what he was saying.
Really? What do I think I was saying?
Well, the other actors, yes, absolutely. They were great. And they completely meant every word. Just the one actor I had issues with.
No, I got it from him, you know? Like, he was really there, and, you know, of course, there's two different Hamlets.
Well, yeah.
There's the Hamlet that's, you know, when they're alone and they're talking to each other, and he's trying to be, all right, so what are you here for?
Yeah, he's sane.
Right. And then there's the Hamlet, and it's all Shakespearean. They're both Shakespearean.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Of course, you know, if Hamlet's there, that means they're on the stage, and it's Shakespeare's language. But the way the delivery is just so different from when they're in alone and he's trying to gather, they're doing the questions game with each other, and he's, you know, trying to get
well,
things out of them.
He wasn't in the questions game.
Well,
that was just for RNG.
Well, after they had the discussion, then they took the whole game and took the score from their interrogation.
And let me just read directly. Since we're up to that part, let me just read directly from my notes. I fucking love the Game of Questions scene.
Of course.
It is, as I've mentioned on Facebook and Google Plus and Twitter, I believe, it is my favorite scene from the movie. It is what made me fall in love with this movie. It is effectively a game of tennis or badminton or what have you, played with questions, and you have to answer a question with a question, and there are other rules that they explain and score according to in the scene.
Ah, Stoppard.
I don't know if I had more fun watching Roth and... Well, I did have more fun with that scene than seeing Roth and Oldman do Shakespeare. It was great to see them do that. You know, two of my favorite actors doing Shakespeare. Amazing. But the Game of Questions scene is a thing of beauty. And
that
I think
never gets old.
I generally preferred it when they were out of the play.
Well, yeah. The play is so tense and just... It's this whole stream of people running around. And of course, why would anybody willingly get into that is kind of,
yeah.
I think, the overall message of it.
Well, that's the great thing about it is it's this philosophical comedy because it has a lot to do with identity and you know, invention and kind of being out of time. And then you juxtapose that with this perfectly classical version of Hamlet.
It's the most basic philosophical question. It's, you know, why are we here? And do we have to play along with something even if it's not good for us?
Yeah. Because they pretty much knew they were going to die from the beginning.
Yeah.
Or at least they had a sense.
Times. they were kind of thick about it until it was spelled out for them.
Well, yeah, until but it's confirmed. But you can tell at least Guildenstern, Roth's character, he
like
had a
eight
sense.
Bodies. Yeah, there's only six. What do you mean? Eight.
Yeah. But before we get to, because that's the very end of the movie, before we get to that, I also really liked Rosencrantz, Oldman's character's continual inventions. He invented the Newton's cradle, or at least discovered that property, that physical trait. The airplane, at one point the paper airplane. At one point he builds a paper biplane.
Yeah, I was. The paper airplane got much more of a laugh out of me when on like the earlier showing, the earlier viewings. This time around,
I actually haven't seen this since the early 90s. So,
last time I saw this, I showed this to a class of students I was teaching Hamlet to.
Oh, okay. So you've seen it a lot more recently before this time than I have.
So, wow, that was almost 10 years ago. Can you believe that?
Still more recently than I have.
Yeah, but, I mean, can you believe that whole teaching thing was 10 years
ago?
Yeah.
But every time he tries to invent these things or discover a scientific principle, at one point he does the Galileo thing of, dropping the feather and the ball and saying that they're going to land at the same time. Of course, neglecting air resistance on the feather.
Well, you had to wonder how far did, the laws of physics
apply to that universe, yeah.
Yeah. At first, like, it seemed one, they did drop at the same speed when he first did it in the chest. So then when he turns to show off the balcony, and of course Tim Roth's reactions are just perfect. Just this fucking idiot.
And that's the thing, is he comes up with these things, and when he's alone, they work. The minute he shows Guildenstern, they go completely wrong.
That's right, isn't it? I hadn't picked up on that. When he's alone, everything worked. That they actually fell at the same speed when he was by himself.
When he's alone, he is the greatest scientific mind who had ever lived up to that point. But then the minute Guildenstern comes into the picture, the rules change.
Or after, look what I found. It's just...
Now, there were a few things I didn't care for, or at least I don't think fit in the movie. The scene in the bathhouse when the player king kind of phases in and out of the steam,
yeah,
was odd. I didn't quite get that.
That's a very weird scene. In fact, I kind of forgotten about that. So they kind of show the dude's ass, and I was kind of like, oh, don't tell anybody or turn me in, kids.
Ah, nice. But it's actually, yeah, around that same time, there's this, cloud of steam, and you see the player king kind of phasing in and out of it.
Yeah.
Didn't get that. Also, shortly after that, the players leave the bathhouse, and it's almost a Python-esque thing where they're running almost in sped up time.
They did do that. Yeah, the Benny Hill.
Yeah, Benny Hill of Python.
Yeah.
Again, didn't get the point of it. Don't think it fit. Although I did love their performance of it, I think it's the pseudo Hamlet, the fake Hamlet.
Yeah.
The play with eight corpses, as they pretty much refer to it. Loved that. I was transfixed by it.
The dumb show. Yeah. So yeah, the play within the play within the play.
Yeah, exactly. But then, of course, they take Hamlet away. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, they're to take him to England, presumably to be killed.
And honestly, as far as the play Hamlet goes, that is probably the weakest plot point.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so let's get this straight. They take him away, and then he arranges these pirates to come to rescue him, to bring him back, and, sends a message to England to execute these dudes that show up on their shore. What? That doesn't make any sense.
Although, before we get to my one little issue with that, the pirate attack was very Gilliam.
Oh, yes. Crimson Assurance all the way.
Yes, I forgot exactly what, but you're right. It's been a while since I've seen that sketch. And again, I don't think it quite fit the look, the feel of the rest of the movie. It just kind of became very slapstick for a few minutes.
That's the deal. There is no overall fit. He just phased into different things for just a little bit and then phased right back.
Yeah. Well, but I think it went a little too far in those few points.
It might have been a point as to show just how absurd that plot is. Because think about it.
Yeah,
What
true.
I just said.
Yeah, good point, good point.
They sail off with him. He somehow arranges pirates to come and get him, or his friends to pose as pirates to rescue him.
Well, that's the question I had, because I always understood it as Hamlet arranged for the pirates.
Yeah.
But
How?
well, how, for one thing.
Right.
But also the court attendant, because I'm not exactly sure who he was. Oh, British, I have it in my notes. When the British ambassador enters the court and says he was there to tell the king that his commandment was fulfilled, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, the last line of the movie. It sounds like the king set up the pirates.
Oh, Fortinbras.
You know, it was they were the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead by the king's commandment.
I doubt that it was Fortinbras that did it, though. Or maybe it was. Who knows? Yeah, that's a very, very sketchy part of Shakespeare's plot. But now, the thing is, the original Hamlet, and if I'm trying to remember, do this from memory, it's, like I said, it's been 10 years. But it's at least 500 years old from when Shakespeare did it. I mean, it dates back that far.
Right. Same thing with Tristan and Isolde, which is what Romeo and Juliet was based on. It's a Greek play.
Right. This was originally, in many aspects, it was a comedy. It was comparable to Bugs Bunny. That Hamlet was just this kind of impish person, causing mischief in the kingdom and
And now I'm picturing Bugs Bunny wandering into Elsinore Castle because he took a wrong turn at Albuquerque.
well,
And
and he
it
also
actually works.
remember he also did say goodnight, sweet prince, once to
Yeah.
Elmer Fudd.
But I'm saying he that actually works as a Looney Tunes thing.
Yes. So it was all about trying to catch someone in the act of sin to kill them. So it's this whole complete farce. And for some reason, Shakespeare decided to tell this in the story of a drama, because it probably had been told in the form of a drama somewhere along the way in that century. But yeah, it's undergone many different writings before even Shakespeare got his hands on it.
Well, that's like Romeo and Juliet. The original was Tristan and Isolde. Well,
Well,
actually, that
yeah.
was the earliest known version, but it went through how many iterations before Shakespeare did it? And like a lot of his other ideas, he stole a lot.
Right, and it was very common to do so back
Oh,
then.
yeah.
No one was coming up with original stories because, you know what? People didn't want to see original stories when they were going to the theater anyway. It was all about the repetition.
Who wants to see original stories nowadays?
Very true.
Aside
Very true.
from the few of us
To
who actually like Jean Carruth's movies and things like
right
this,
here,
and
something new,
yeah.
yeah.
So that hasn't changed much.
Yeah, I mean, they wanted to go see movies where they knew pretty much the lines and what was going to happen. And it made it easier to tell the story,
If it's something they've heard a million times and have completely grokked.
Yeah. And they knew, I mean, it wasn't like he was pawning it off as his own original story. People knew this story already, odds were, oh, he's referencing that.
I never thought about the audience getting the references in his
Yeah.
movies. That is an interesting way to look at, that kind of puts a new spin on, Shakespeare's popularity at the time and kind of a new way to look at it, for me at
Yeah.
least.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what theater was all about for centuries. It was just the ritual of going to it, everybody being together and seeing a story that to try to get one sort of emotional reaction or another.
Interesting.
But yeah, these are, as basic and classical a story as he could put. And he, with his language, bringing it to life, sort of like the definite our version of a a better special effected movie,
Right.
which is what we'll see Star Wars as 7 years from now.
Well, episode 7 is 2 years away.
Oh, you're right. So
Or two and
yeah.
change.
So
The remake of the original trilogy might be 7 years away, but
yeah, the remake of the original trilogy, I would say, will happen in 22 if everybody hasn't gotten bored of Star Wars yet, which would
Right.
probably prevent that from happening.
Back to Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. One last bit of trivia. Oldman and Roth were originally cast the other way around.
Did it matter?
But it's interesting given that the characters really, for most of the movie, aren't sure who was who. It's interesting that they were cast the other way around. I think it's officially Oldman is Rosencrantz, Roth is Guildenstern.
Yeah.
I think they've established that a couple of times.
One was Laurel and one was Hardy.
Yeah, well, Guildenstern Roth was Hardy, and Rosencrantz Oldman was Laurel. He was the buffoon.
One was R2-D2, the other was C-3PO.
More Abbott and Costello. I mean, they were really just a straight up straight man buffoon team.
I think Lucas actually used Laurel and Hardy to describe C-3PO and
That was an influence. It was
R2.
also these two characters from a Kurosawa film.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm pretty much done with my notes.
I am too.
On to sequels and remakes. And yes, I have something for sequels and remakes.
I was gonna say, God, no, what are you talking about?
No sequels, of course. No official remake. However, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Undead is a 2009 American independent film written and directed by Jordan Galland. The film's title refers to a fictitious play within the movie, which is a comic reinterpretation of Shakespeare's Hamlet and its aftermath, and whose title is a reference to the play Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, of course. The play within the.
So, it's Shakespeare characters come back from the dead after Hamlet.
According to Wikipedia, the play within the film is revealed in short segments throughout the movie. Its basic plot points are that Hamlet's friend Horatio is a master vampire over 2,000 years old. He had once lived in ancient Rome. Throughout a series of twists and turns, Hamlet and his simple-minded friends Rosencrantz and Guildenstern become vampires themselves. When Horatio attempts to turn Hamlet's girlfriend Ophelia into a vampire, she thwarts him by drowning herself first. Hamlet angrily confronts Horatio but discovers that one vampire cannot kill another.
Oh boy.
I really want to see this. Unfortunately, I could not find a digital copy anywhere, legally or otherwise. All right, so on to Brains.
On to brains.
Even though it has a few flaws, it is still a thing of beauty. Frankly, the game of questions scene alone merits this. I gotta go five.
I laughed from beginning to end of this. Every line just popped out for me. I kept thinking, wow, maybe we should have done like a trilogy of Shakespeare or something off this. But after, of course, we've gone through this episode, I'm thinking it's a good idea that we just do Shakespeare every now and
Yeah,
then.
yeah. I think the last time we touched him was Scotland, PA.
Yeah.
So every once in a while.
So obviously, it anticlimactic here, A5.
All right, so what have we learned?
That England does exist.
I learned that life in a box is better than no life at all.
I also learned who the original Bert and Ernie may have been.
Ha. Yeah. Well, no, they didn't really have those overtones. RNG, I'm talking about.
Are you sure?
I didn't pick up on them. Well, okay, I'm not even gonna continue that one. All right, so until next week, when we'll be reviewing Mad Max, starting the trilogy that I referred to earlier, we are
Yes.
doing the Mad Max trilogy next. This is gonna be interesting.
It's been a long time since I've seen the original.
I saw all three of them several months ago.
Really?
Just wanted to revisit.
Wow.
We've already established that we disagree on which of the first two is better, so that's going to be interesting. I think we'll pretty much agree on the third.
That's your forecast.
Yeah, I'm reasonably sure we'll agree on the last one. All right, so until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you are already listening to. The links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You also find the Podtrac survey. Please, come on, fill out the Podtrac survey. It'll help us get some demographic information, which, when we get enough listeners, may help us get some advertisers.
That would be nice. Making money off this, huh?
You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. There's no placeholder, but at least through the Mad Max trilogy, maybe a couple after that are in order. You'll also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, leave it on the request form. We'll get to it eventually. And the recommendations list, was there any question?
Yeah.
This is the love fest that we referred to 2 weeks ago before we knew we were doing Serenity. So we knew this one was going there.
Hope you made it through it. Well, if you heard this, then I guess you have.
You can also send us an email, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01, or for the alphanumerically challenged, 414-368-9861. Until
What?
then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
You call that an ending? With practically everyone still on his feet? My goodness, no! Over your dead body!
Same thing with Tristan and Isolde, which is what Romeo and Juliet was based on. It's a Greek play.
Right. Originally, it was a comedy.
Pause. Can you hear the computer? That hum?
Yes.
Okay, 1 second. I'm just gonna unplug and take. It's gonna take.
Oh, your computer. I thought you were talking about mine. I can't hear yours.
Okay, 1 sec. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I had to unplug my the cooler.
I
At
thought you were
which.
talking about my computer.
No, I'm not plugged into that same port. Okay. I could have done that. Anyway, I hit the desk, the fans went crazy.
Oh.
So I'll just go back to Tristan and Isolde, which is what Romeo and Juliet is based on, is